MJ Emerson had an injury today. We'll talk about how that relates to the Browns in a second. Dylan Gabriel doing his best Forrest Gump impression in front of us. Hey. I was running. He is just running full-out sprints right now.
Hey, listen, he's getting like, I mean, it's goal line to goal line, bro.
What is happening? Like, it's like it's a million degrees out. He's just running full-on sprints.
Well,
I
just
it.
See Daryl said that he threw a pick.
He got picked. So he got picked in the red zone to end his two-minute drill. And I guess maybe he's punishing himself.
Oh, yeah, that's what's happening.
Is that what it is?
Shame.
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 It's his version of a shame bush. He's got to do some sprints instead.
Yeah, it's like, I mean, it's not Game of Thrones shame, but, yeah. You know.
Well, nothing's really Game of Thrones shit.
I mean, he's moving. Listen, I saw Patrick Mahomes doing that.
He's running.
Yeah.
Like, oh, you saw Mahomes do this too?
Like in the quarterback little documentary?
Oh, yeah.
He was running and weaving and doing things like that.
That's because radio hosts called him fat is why that was. He was like, I just need to do some extra conditioning.
He's like, I'm going to work my way. He's the only quarterback now, I know works his way into shape during the season.
Can I say this about Dylan Gabriel?
Go ahead.
Low-key fast.
No, listen, hold on. Let me.
I didn't know he was this fast.
Hold on. So let me throw this. I was out here on Thursday, right?
Yeah.
And the first thing I said was, "Hey man," I turned to Jason Lloyd. I tapped him on the shoulder. I said, "Hey, listen. Hey man, Dylan Gabriel got a little arm on him, huh?"
Well, so he's always had the velocity. Like he threw it like 70 miles per hour at the combine. Like we knew he could throw it. I think that's a good point though. I think it's interesting when you see it in person. It definitely is. It fires off a little bit.
Yeah, it hit a little different. Yeah. Like, you know what I'm saying? When you see it, that's why I be trying.
But that's the thing with Dylan Gabriel though. It's never been about whether or not he could actually play the game. It's whether or not he could play the game being a munchkin. The thing with Dylan was, could he play the game at 5'8"? Like, because in college all he did was make passes.
Yeah,
all he's done is make completions. I've never had a problem with his actual game. Again, every level he's ever been at, he's performed to a high degree. Yeah. I just have a problem with the fact that I don't know that he can see over the offensive line.
I think my assessment was that when he's throwing outs and slants with clean pockets and a little bit of real estate in front of him,
yeah,
he's highly accurate. He has velocity on the ball, looks good. The issue is in confined spaces with a rush in his face, it's a little different.
Yeah.
He now has to find those windows, and it don't really help that much if your left tackle standing right in front of you is 6'8". So now you definitely got to find a couple extra windows, especially if the pressure is there. So, you know, that's the thing that will be the key for him to figure out what he was going to do. But that's one thing about coming to practice. You ask me, man, you just come to practice? And I say, yeah, because.
Yeah, well, I mean, because I've known you for a million years, and I've never known you just to come to practice, but now you're here every day.
Yeah, I just was like, well, here's the thing, too. When you see it, because I'm like you, I heard you on the way in. I'm along the lines of I'm an individual that I would like to have a lottery ticket. I want to see which one of these quarterbacks can possibly be something because I know that the greatest stimulus package in the world is actually having first round picks that you don't have to spend on quarterbacks.
Exactly. You can spend it on skill position players. Yeah. You get whatever your heart desires.
It's like going to the grocery store and not being hungry.
And imagine having the quarterback situation figured out, and then you got two of those to spend next year.
Man, so I said, let me come down here and look. I got to see for myself. At the time, you know, Shador wasn't getting any first team reps.
Well, we're going to get in a lot of Shador in the 4 o'clock hour as well. So don't worry. We're going to have a lot of room for Shador.
So, but I will say, so I had to come down and take a look at it. And I was saying on UCSS earlier today.
Yeah.
I said, you know, you could have, we heard Jimmy Haslam speak. You can have all the plans in the world. But when you get out here and practice and life starts happening.
What's your of mice and men quote?
The best laid plans of mice and men often go awry.
There we go.
Now, look, man, you got the best plans in the world. But when you get here and people start moving around and large human beings start tackling people, people seem to start dropping a little bit. So.
Well, and so that's the interesting thing here, G. Like, so Kenny Pickett got injured, and again, he was running 80 yards, kind of like doing what Dylan Gabriel was doing right there. Mm-hmm. But he was basically just celebrating. That's not, like, I can't put that on a hard practice or this one not being Camp Cupcake or anything like that. But then you have the MJ Emerson injury, and we're 2 weeks into this thing, and you have what was potentially your day one starting quarterback, and then your second best corner on the team that was supposed to have a big bounce back season, and all of a sudden, players are dropping like flies. So I do wonder if this will change what the Browns do moving forward, because they've gotten a lot of praise And I don't know. I haven't been in every practice. It's the first practice I've been at. But, like, have you seen on Saturday and then on Monday and really last Friday, did you see it being much different than what it was last year? Because last year was a joke, in my opinion. Like, I watched those practices. I was out here doing shows. Last year was an absolute joke when it came to toughness and physicality. But did they course correct a little bit too much?
I went down, and I went – the first thing I wanted to see was I wanted to go down, and I got here, and I watched the offensive line. And the offensive line was doing pre-practice. Now, pre-practice, for those that don't know, is, practice starts at, say, 2. Mm-hmm. But we all know that 1:30, we're out there getting that pre-work in. Mm-hmm. And that's where you can get a lot of extra work. And they were out there drilling power steps, zone steps, gap schemes. I'm saying, wow, I haven't seen this. Guys are talking, really, really working on hand placement. And I knew it was different then because – last year, it was based on, hey, let's get everybody to the finish line. Let's get everybody ready to go so we don't gotta, you know. We want to get everybody whole by the first game. And then they realized that by the time they got to the Dallas Cowboys game, they said, oh, this is the second week of training camp for these guys when we playing real games.
Yeah, and they got just absolutely destroyed by what turned out to be a pretty bad Cowboys team.
Bad. So that's how bad it was. When you get smoked by them and then they come out and look bad, it just goes to show you the difference in mentality.
It almost felt like last year, and we saw this in a couple of different spots across the NFL, but it kind of felt like last year they were just like, well, everyone's in agreement. We'll take the first 4 weeks kind of easy. And we'll just kind of like ease our way into the season. And we'll just kind of, it's 17 games now, not 16. So we got to take it a little bit differently. And the Browns just didn't get the memo that not every team was doing that, you know? And a team like the Cowboys came out and just punched them in the face. And it's different this offseason. Have you noticed that? Like, the Bengals, Browns play the Bengals week one. What has been the messaging out of Cincinnati in that camp? It has been, we are going to play harder, we're going to play more physical, and we're going to have a tough camp. We're going to do things differently so that week one, we look better. Now, I'd argue in years past, they look bad because Zach Taylor decided that running the ball was the best option when Joe Burrow's his quarterback, but that's neither here nor there. They're taking these things just a little bit different, and that's why I find it so interesting. Like, after seeing the MJ Emerson injury today, do they then go back to the other direction and go back to what it was last year, or do they maintain, pedal to the metal, let's keep this thing hard, let's keep these practices hard?
I think they stay with the hard practices. Go out, you know, Instagram, as I'm watching, there's a nice little soundbite of Kevin Stefanski when they pull it up. He says, listen, guys, it was hot out here today. It's going to be hot out here tomorrow. There's only one way to get your body ready, and that's to train hard and to practice hard. So, you know, there will be casualties. That's part of, you know, you're going to get some friendly fire. You're going to get some casualties. But here's the thing. If he wants to go back to what he was and the identity, see, sometimes you got to break it down. What was your identity? People are saying, hey, you know, we want to go back to that old school Kevin Stefanski. And I'm like, well, do you remember what that was? That was play action, boots, screens, and prime Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt running downhill. I don't see Kareem Hunt. I don't see Nick Chubb. Quinshon Judkins is not signed. Nick Chubb is playing for the Houston Texans. So my thing
is – apparently looks pretty bad too, by the way.
Who was that?
Nick Chubb.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Listen, I didn't hear you. I
still have friends in Houston, and I've talked to a couple of them, and they say, like, the ones that are there at the camp every day, and they made the suggestion that Nick Chubb doesn't look like he – it looks like a very bad signing at this point.
Oh, okay.
Like, it looks awful.
We'll see. They're like,
we know why the Browns didn't re-sign him now.
Well, Joe Mixon is out, I believe, for until the preseason starts. So we'll see how many carries Nick Chubb gets. But here's the thing. I think a lot of people were willing to say, okay, well, if Nick Chubb is not going to be your third, if he's not going to be in the mix and you drafted two running backs, okay, we get it. But one of them running backs, we don't even know going to play. So what are we going to hang our hat on in terms of the running game? It's still Jerome Ford. It's still Pierre Strong.
Right.
And Dillon Sampson. Like, so, you know, be careful what you ask for. But to get the offensive line ready to go in order to run that play style, they got to give them reps. They got to do it. So we'll see how it works.
All right, 216-474-0092, at GBush91, at JPNO is how you find us on Twitter. Twitter reactions brought to you by our friends at Scheiben Jewelers, Cleveland's premier jewelry store. Coach Riz joining us in about a half hour or so. We'll get back to the Brownies at that point. Big Shador Sanders 420, 440 segment as well. We'll get a lot of those type of conversations, and it really just kind of get us ramped up. I feel like both me and you and Spencer, who's sitting right here as well. We all feel very fondly of Shador. We're like the three Shador people on the station. We can throw Earl in the mix as well.
The coalition.
The coalition. And so we'll have a heavy, let's just love on Shador 420, 440 type segment. But I think there's some truth and some conversations that we have to have around Shador. So we'll do that in the 4 o'clock hour. But I want to talk with you guys about what's going on with Emmanuel Clase, because I didn't get a chance to do any of this yesterday. I just got back from Boston, and so Nick was in yesterday with Chris, with Fedor, and so now this is my first crack at it. But we've seen more and more parts of the story as well. Ken Rosenthal tweeting out last night about what this could mean for the deadline. We'll get to that side of things. But it's interesting. Last time me and you hosted together, it was the day that Ortiz got cracked, and we went through that whole entire saga. Down to the amount of states. There was three different states that bets were placed, and it was interesting because I remember kind of laying down the foundation for it and explaining just how stupid it is that any player would be guilty of such a thing. Mm-hmm. Because, listen, I got a buddy of mine who always says, I don't go gambling, I go winning, okay? And so, I got to do this. I got to do this in two different spades here, right? This isn't gambling the way that people are talking about it being gambling. And it's a problem I have with the whole entire discussion to begin with. So we'll unpack this as we go here, okay? This is closer to I don't go gambling, I go winning. This isn't a bet as to whether or not they will win the outcome. When Pete Rose was betting in the 70s, okay, he still had to wonder to himself, I'm only one guy. I can only manipulate the game so much. I might end up on the losing end of this. When Ohtani's interpreter was losing millions of dollars, it's not because he was going winning, it's because he was going gambling and being awful at it. The difference here between what Ortiz is accused of and what Clase is accused of, that's not gambling. That's them winning. That's them pocketing money, and that's them figuring out the outcomes. Now, what Guardians may have known something was coming. They're not idiots. Vogt said in the piece that he didn't know exactly what was coming, but they weren't born yesterday, okay? They just weren't. The reality is they thought to themselves, he might be under investigation for this. We're still going to put him out on the field because we know he's impacting the game in such a little minuscule way, and we're still getting the outcomes that we want out of him. Like, at this point, yeah, you can label it gambling, but this isn't gambling to me. This is a way of just pocketing extra money, even though the infractions are just as serious as gambling, and the MLB has to treat it just as serious as gambling. When you do one pitch bets for $40,000, $30,000, like, gee, you're not gambling on the outcome of the game.
That's free money.
That's just free money. You're cashing. You're not losing that bet.
It's I'll be fascinated to see when they really break it down, because you know they got a situation where they're like, okay, we can't come out with nothing. We ain't going to say nothing. But I want to know what tipped it off. Like, obviously, if you're betting pitch to pitch, like...
Well, so it's got to be the large sums of money that were placed on it. That was the tip-off. So, like, in the Ortiz instance, we never found out what the amount was, but reasonable minds would suggest that if it was a $10,000 bet on one pitch to start off an inning, that's going to raise a red flag. Like, you don't need a system to tell you something's wrong here. Anyone that's been in Vegas for any amount of time will tell you something's not right here.
And you know, the crazy part about it is, I always tell people like this, man, try to go wire to over $10,000. Flagged.
Right.
Go to an airport and have 10,000 cash. Flagged.
Can't do it.
You can't do it. Like, so for you to believe that they're not watching this, and this is digital, there's a digital footprint on everything you're doing. And it's very easy to go back. And the crazy part about it is when they're doing investigations and they come get your hard drives, or they come get them cell phones. It's like, okay, at that point, they're watching you. And let me ask you this.
Yeah.
We can't prove it, but do you think the two actions are connected?
Yeah, I don't know how it couldn't be. Like Ortiz or Clase, we don't know which one would have been the starter here, but there's no way that the two of them are just lone wolves on this.
Right. Like,
there's got to be, and I'm doing a lot of guesstimating. Whether or not we'll ever have it proven or not is another thing, and you can just take the Hector Gomez tweets and just shove it up where the sun doesn't shine. I don't care about him. Mm-hmm. But, like, just think about the idea that Ortiz would look at this as free money, Clase would look at it as free money, and that everybody else in the room would just say no. Like, it starts and stops at two people. I just don't buy it. Not if they actually thought they had some sort of syndicate and some sort of way of actually doing this. It's just whether or not baseball can prove it is what I'm trying to get to.
I don't, and here's the thing, I don't think that they maybe they didn't think about it, even if obviously they're not dumb enough to go up and say, here, I'm going to put it where it was easily traceable back to me. But it's still easily traceable back to, like, whoever it is, right? Like, if you are in specific cities and they can see a pattern of, hey, these guys are betting 10,000, 20,000 on right. one pitch, let's go and see who
You know who those guys are. So, like, for instance, I have a buddy of mine, and I was on his bachelor party. He's one of my, he was in my wedding. He's one of my he's a good friend of mine, right? Mm-hmm. And he works at one of the gambling companies. Mm-hmm. Okay, and so I'm at his bachelor party. We're in Vegas all together, and one of the guys that was on this Vegas trip with him, a buddy of his, was just one of the guys that ends up. He's a client of his. And they just ended up becoming buddies. But the client of his is there for reasons, because he bets massive amount of dollars. He's very, very wealthy, very well off. And I'm sitting there and I'm talking to this guy, and we're just eating, we're eating steak, just having a dinner and everything like that. And the guy is telling me how he's betting $10,000 on spring training baseball games. Like, spring training baseball was going on, and he's betting $10,000 a game, and he's moving the lines on spring training. But it's like, well, who's he hanging out with in this setting? He's right. hanging out with the guy that is his connection to the gambling app that he uses. Like, not only did they know each other, they became good friends. That's how well they know each other, because, like, this is how this works. If you're in that space and you're gambling that amount of money, the casinos know who you are. Yeah. The gambling companies know who you they know who you are. They know everything about you. So if you randomly pop up and through three different states you're betting on Guardians first pitches, it's going to signal some alarms. Like, people are going to be like, where did this come from? Who is this guy? And what do we know about him? And luckily for at least baseball, baseball didn't just sleep on some of the warning signs. How obvious the warning signs were is what I'm interested in, though. 216-474-0092. I have one theory that connects Ortiz and Clase together that nobody's thought of. I got one. I'll tell that to you guys in 5 minutes. We'll get to Coach Riz coming up in about 20 minutes as well. It's Jonathan Peterlin and Garrett Bush, Afternoon Drive in Berea, right here on The Fan.